The U.S. Circuit Court judge issued a blanket injunction against all, and I quote, all parading, demonstrating, boycotting, trespassing, and picketing. It was a legal ploy in 1963 to prevent the Southern Christian Leadership Conference led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. from engaging its nonviolent civil rights campaign in Birmingham, Alabama. When King and others defied the ruling, citing it as an unjust law aimed at perpetuating oppression, they were arrested and jailed under particularly harsh conditions. It was Good Friday. In the days that followed, King wrote the now infamous letter from Birmingham jail on the margins of newspaper smuggled to him by his lawyer and a trustee. He was responding to a group of clergy, including an Episcopal priest who had acknowledged the injustice of racism and segregation in our nation, but implored King to make his case in the courts rather than on the streets. That would be the peaceful way to proceed, they argued. King responded by refuting their logic as angling to preserve the status quo, a pseudo-peace, really, built upon the false notions of a segregated nation, separate but unequal, unjust and immoral. He wrote, "I submit that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law." And then he goes on to cite theologians from Augustine to Aquinas to Tillich, and he argues that we have not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws and to disobey unjust ones. It's quite remarkable how resonant his words are even today, right? There's another letter that was written from jail that I want to highlight with you today also. It is the letter to the Philippians written by St. Paul that Christina read just a few moments ago, an excerpt from. Paul had been imprisoned in Rome because those in power saw him as a threat to the status quo, known as the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. It was a pseudo-peace structured to perpetuate the separate and unequal society of that imperial Rome. And the circumstances of the writing of this letter are equally remarkable and worth telling. The church community in Philippi had been founded by Paul years earlier, and they shared a special bond. He loved them, and they loved him dearly. So they are naturally and deeply distressed when they learn of his imprisonment, and one among them, Epaphroditus, we're told, goes to care for Paul in prison. Roman prisons shared no food with prisoners, no care was provided by the jailers, and people would suffer terribly and often starve as they awaited their trial. It was all part of keeping that pseudo-peace. Epaphroditus arrives but falls deathly ill, and so instead of caring for him unidirectionally, he and Paul care for one another, and their bond is strengthened all the more. And then Paul writes this beautiful letter to his beloved friends back in Philippi, sending it with Epaphroditus when he returns home. Folks, what Paul writes in this letter to the Philippians is nothing short of a love letter. A love letter He sets aside his own self-concern as a prisoner. He knows he's going to be executed at this point. And yet he sets all that aside and he offers these beautiful words of endearment and encouragement to his friends. 16 times in this brief letter, he exhorts them to be joyful, to rejoice. Because, he says, that's what you were created to do. And that joy will light the path forward, even in the difficult times. And then he offers this sublime little list of spiritual practices by which, he says, they will discover the truth of life if they will just practice them. And they are timely exhortations to us today. They are four. They are, Paul says to you and me, live boldly in the face of injustice. Live humbly as servants of Christ in this broken, hurting world. Live faithfully into your identity as children of God. And live authentically as agents of the kingdom of God. And God will usher in the peace that surpasses all understanding. He then thanks them for the gift of their witness to him and to the world. And he beseeches them to work together and work with God, who is working with them all along. And finally, rejoice. Rejoice in the face of whatever life throws at you. He blesses Epaphroditus as he takes his leave. They know they will never, ever see each other again. And Epaphroditus delivers that letter to his church community and to us here today. It is an inspiring epistle of love and joy in the midst of grief, which is why it is so poignant. The science of bereavement teaches us that joy and grief are companions in the way of love. Back in my days as a hospice physician, I came to understand this not rationally, but existentially, that to love one another is the greatest source of joy in all of life. But to love one another also necessarily means that the loss of a loved one will prompt a grief that cannot be comprehended as a rational thing alone. Grief refuses to be a thought experiment. It plumbs the depths of our reality and changes it forever. And yet, we love. We love. And we long to love. Why? Because we are loved and we are drawn into that orbit of the source of all love, who rejoices when we rejoice and grieves when we grieve. That is the mystery of the incarnation that is written upon our hearts and writ large upon all of creation, that God comes among us in our joys and in our griefs and just simply rests with us. Is present to us. Both these letters, Martin Luther King's letter and St. Paul's letter, they both bear witness to the love and the joy and the hope and the sorrow and the grief and the loss that are the human condition in all of its brokenness and its potentiality. Both these letters bear prophetic witness to us. Yes, they were both written for another audience and another time, but you see, their prophetic truth can be extrapolated down for our purposes even today. And we would do well to draw on them for inspiration. I reread both of these letters this past week as I made a trip to the U.S.-Mexican border to engage fellow Episcopalians in that region who, I can attest to you today, are doing exactly what Paul was encouraging. They are living boldly. They are living humbly as servants of Christ. They are living faithfully as children of God, and they are living authentically as they respond to the humanitarian crisis arising from our nation's lack of a cohesive and just immigration policy. I'm still unpacking that experience. I got home late last night. I'm tired. I'll be unpacking it for some time. And I want to unpack it with you all in community. Nancy Ross and I went together along with 26 other Episcopalians around the country. We will share our experience with you in more detail in the coming weeks. We will invite you into conversation about that humanitarian crisis that we witnessed firsthand and how we as a community here in the Pacific Northwest might respond even here locally. But let me just say this morning that I was inspired by what I saw. I was inspired by people on both sides of the border, because these people were rejoicing and grieving in the same moment with remarkable grace. There is a heavy weariness among the people who live on both sides of the border. And yet they also remarkably embodied this spirit of resolute joy in being with each other when they can. And what became clear to me in the summarizing statement I would offer to you about the experience is that no wall can divide those people on both sides of the border from their common experience of knowing each other as humans, as fellow humans, as people that are worthy of dignity. No wall will separate them from that common and mutual concern. And the people who are doing the work of humanitarian, dignified care and relief of refugees seeking asylum in this country are just trying to flee the violence in their former countries. What we saw in those people was this incredible ability to hold the grief with one while being able to greet the next one with joy, because I believe they love those people as Christ loves us and invites us to love them as well. We were at Annunciation House in El Paso, where the father of Jacqueline McQueen, the 7-year-old who was killed, who died on the border this week, that's where he is this week, at Annunciation House. And the people there treated us with remarkable hospitality and then asked us to give our seats up for the next busload of people that our Customs and Border Control were dropping off to them to figure out where they might go, because all the detention centers are full. I'd like to challenge each of you to do three things this week. Three things. It will not take more than an hour or two of your time, but three things I want you to do. First, I want you to read or reread King's letter from Birmingham Jail with the humanitarian crisis of our day in mind as you read it. We will talk more as a community on the Wednesday evening of January 16th. We'll have more to say about that later. But read the letter this week as you lean into your Christmastide. Secondly, read St. Paul's short letter to the Philippians and respond to his words of encouragement by rejoicing in your life this week, even as you may grieve at the same time with all that life brings to your doorstep. Above all, be true to yourself. That's the living authentically piece. And thirdly, Thirdly, write a letter. Not a text, not an email, but write a letter to someone whom you love. Express your gratitude for their place in your life. Encourage them in their life. And say to them in that letter whatever you would say if you knew you were not going to ever see them again. That's my challenge to you. Think of it as a love letter, as encouragement in the face of hardship, as expressing gratitude for them and their place in your life, and then commend them to God, who is the source of all that is good and true and just. Share the letter if you want. Set it aside, put it away, burn it. Do whatever you want with it. But in that letter, speak the truth of what is on your heart. Speak the truth in love, because that is what you were created to do. And then embrace that trajectory that St. Paul invites us all into, to live boldly in the face of the injustices of this world, to live humbly as servants of Christ, to live faithfully as children of God, and live authentically as agents of the kingdom of God. And if you do, the peace of God, which surpasses all human understanding, will dwell in your heart and in this world all the more. That's my challenge.